Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to episode number 246 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is November 12th, 2012. We've got a really big show for you. Coming up on the podcast today, if you have any questions or comments, we want to get to all of them. You can drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com, or you can give us a call, 206-888-6755. Leave a brief voicemail, and we will play it on the air. You can also go to peristylepodcast.com, click on the left side of the page, and leave a voicemail right from your computers. Like I said, we have a big show coming up. Special guest this week. We haven't had a special guest on in a while. Coach Harvey Hyde is on special assignment. So we have Dan Weber coming up in the very first segment. He's going to answer all of your questions about this USC Trojan football team. But later on the show, we have Zach Jerome. He is the creator of a blog called Lost Angeles Blog. You can find it at lostangelesblog.wordpress.com. You can also follow him on Twitter, lost_Angeles. Hilarious USC blogger. He's a USC grad, and if you've never read any of his blog posts, it's pretty funny. He's the founder of Arrogant Nation. He sells all kinds of t-shirts. Can get a little blue, I think is the term you want to say. So maybe you don't want your kids to listen in. He definitely used some off-color language every once in a while, but he is hilarious. I hope you check him out a little bit later on the show. But first, we got Dan Weber, who keeps his language always professional. Dan, what's going on? How are you doing?
Very good. Yeah, and it's a lot easier after a 38-17 win to keep your language nice and proper and elevated and all that kind of thing. I'm not sure what everybody would have been saying if it, as Lane said, with the game tied at halftime, had it gone the other way, he said, we'd be having a completely different conversation. And I guarantee you, that conversation wouldn't be over. So it was a good second 30 minutes Saturday.
Yeah, one of the things that impressed me, Dan, was if you looked at the first quarter, at the exact number, I think it was 154 or something. It was like USC gave up on defense over 150 yards of offense to Arizona State, you know, which would be on pace for about another 600-yard game, similar to what we saw the last couple of games. But for the rest of the game, only 98 yards of offense, under 100 yards in the final three quarters. It seemed like they got something right. They seemed to attack the football a little bit more, and it paid dividends.
Yeah, I mean, because I think one of the things that mathematically starts to happen is they ended up with 56 yards in sacks and another 61, I think it was, in tackles for losses. So there's now you're deducting 117 yards from Arizona State. So when they end up with 250, one of the ways you get to 250 is you take off those 117 yards, and you can only do that if you're playing aggressive football. If you're really basically, you know, they started, instead of standing and reading and trying to remember, let's see, what's my key here? Oh, I know they told me Thursday I was supposed to watch out for. No, what they started doing was they basically started attacking and tackling everybody. They actually accounted for the quarterback. What a thought. The running quarterback, maybe you need to account for him every play. They put him under a lot of pressure when he threw the ball. You know, a lot of times he had to run out of bounds and just throw it away. And he was getting pounded. You know, I mean, think about the Oregon game. Did they tackle Marcus Mariota twice? You know, I mean, did he have to worry about, gee, what's going to happen to me if I have the ball and I got to make a decision to pass or run? Nah. Yeah, you got to take the quarterback out of the game, no matter what kind of option you've got. For 2 weeks in a row, USC hadn't. The third week, and this kid's not a bad quarterback, the Kelly kid at Arizona State, they took him out of the game. Once you took him out of the game, and basically, you know, if you got one running back, you take him out, you just attack. And what a difference. I don't know that USC ever is going to be able to play defensively safe. I mean, most teams can't play soft and prevent and read a bunch of keys. So maybe there's hope as USC, faces at least a couple of more spreads. And basically, I guess if things go right, three more games, let's say, in the season before a bowl game, all three quarterbacks would be threats. You have to be able to take the quarterback out. And it's probably one of the things that if you're coming from the NFL as a defensive coach, the last thing in the world you have a clue about is how to take the quarterback out of the game for the other team. So whatever happened, they won't tell you exactly. They tell you they made lots of adjustments. It was obvious they were more aggressive in attacking and running after the football and not waiting and reacting. How exactly they did that, I think they actually changed up enough, and they blitzed enough, and so they weren't giving them the same looks, and the Arizona State kids were really, really confused as to what to do. And here's a game where we saw USC make the right adjustments, and the other team saying, "What just hit us?" at the end of the game.
I don't want to bring anybody down, Dan, but there's something that Lane Kiffin said in the press conference when we talked about this. We asked him about this, about the aggressive style and stuff on defense. And I don't know if you caught this, but what he said was they played more aggressive, but they couldn't do that against Oregon because the quarterback is dynamic and you have to read more. So it almost sounded like, yes, we can do this against an Arizona State team, but and maybe this is, espionage.
Hopefully, all I can do is hope that that was cover for what they didn't do in the Oregon game. And that was cover for, you're darn right, that's what we're going to do if the chance comes up again. Wow, we can play that way. Mariota is a little bigger, certainly faster. Let's face it. I don't think Oregon has any better – I was just thinking about this. Does Oregon have better athletes than USC? No. Does Oregon have a better system than USC? Yes. What needs to change for USC? The system. So how can they go – how could – it doesn't matter what USC does as long as they don't do what they did the last time they played Oregon. They can't be any worse.
Right.
I mean, how many – you can't score more than every time you touch the ball, except one. I mean, basically, this is the counterpunching theory where it screws you up, I think, is, we got to react to them. No, you've got to play the best way your players can play. With USC's defensive kids, they can run to the football. Let them run to the football. Do they read and react real well? No, they're terrible. They're young. They're athletic, but they're not big, wide body space guys, that just take up all the space on the line of scrimmage, for example, like maybe Auburn did in that championship game 2 years ago against Oregon. They've got to just, go tackle people. Just tackle them. It's that simple. And, I think maybe – and the scary thing is it took a really bad start again at Arizona State – to convince them that what they were doing wasn't working. They do not have John Lynch as a safety, a 10-year, NFL All-Pro. He's not going to be playing for USC. And so asking, to read and react and react perfectly and run at the exact right angle. I mean, here's a team that, really doesn't have the ability to do some things full speed in practice, especially defensively. To ask them to get out on the field against an Oregon and then all of a sudden perform perfectly full speed defensively, not happening. So I think you basically got to go in there. Same way with, UCLA this week. You just have to take away their threats, and you have to do it aggressively, and you have to beat people at the line of scrimmage and put them under pressure. Freshman quarterbacks, put them under pressure. Make them do things they don't really want to do. Don't let them be comfortable. I mean, for example, the kid that, beat USC at Stanford, he's not even starting anymore. That was like his first big start. And they let him run free. You can't do that. And it looks like that sunk in a little bit. We'll see this week. I mean, I think they got to do the same thing this week.
Yeah.
They can't let Hundley just roam free and kind of make a decision, you know, when he wants to make a decision. You want to make him to make a decision on your timetable, not UCLA's.
Well, let's get to some questions, Dan. There's some good points there. The first one, so Luke wrote in after we did the show last week, so before the Arizona State game, defending Monty Kiffin, saying that he's stopped running quarterbacks before, talking about Steve Young and Randall Cunningham and Donovan McNabb in the NFL. So saying that the fact that Monty doesn't know how to stop running quarterbacks is false. And then I wrote him back, and so we probably weren't going to talk about it, but then he wrote me back, and I wanted to read you what he said. He's like, what do you guys think about Monty Kiffin's defense now? The only real points scored on USC Monty Kiffin's defense came from turnovers from the USC offense, Luke. So he's kind of critical. He loves what you talk about with the Paul D stuff. He said you're the best at that, but he says that you're way off when it comes to Monty Kiffin.
Well, I mean, stopping Randall Cunningham. Randall Cunningham only ran when I covered the Eagles. He ran when his life was threatened, and he was a great athlete. But that was scramble. He was scramble Randall Cunningham. But that wasn't, the set offense. And, Steve Young was a good athlete. Again, that was not how the 49ers set up their offense. Nobody in the NFL does that. Nobody's got a backup quarterback that you can even think about, building your offense around a quarterback who's a true run-pass option. So it's just a concept that you don't see. I mean, that's the last place you would, in the NFL too, how would you defend that? You just say, take him out, first tackler, just destroy him. They don't have anybody behind him. That's, one of the reasons you can't run it in the NFL, because the guy will not survive week after week after week. Where's Vic this week? I mean, so no, it's not a personal thing. It's just a style thing. It's just not designed, and never has been, to account for an offensive mind, a running offensive minded quarterback that can run it as well as pass it. It's just something that some defenses aren't designed to handle. I mean, it's like if you've got your middle linebacker is your last pass defender 30 yards downfield trying to run after some guy, that's probably not going to work in college. Maybe, it did in the NFL for a while, but there are some things that you just can't, you can't transfer. And it's pretty obvious. People know what those are, and they're taking advantage of them. And now with the Pac-12, with all these, good, young, run-pass quarterbacks, you have to figure out how to take him out of the game. And I don't think USC did the first part of the game yesterday or Saturday, but they did after that. They figured out you have to take out that quarterback. You have to put him under pressure. And you have to punish him. I mean, you really do. And, you didn't see that in the Oregon game at all. You didn't see it enough at all in the Arizona game as well. Scott was allowed to just pretty much run free. There were just too many plays where the quarterback, they have a set play. But all these teams, it looks like, were basically the quarterback looks to see who's USC dropping off. He drops back, looks to see which one of the, linebackers or defensive ends is going to drop into coverage, and then runs right there. I mean, how could it be any easier? There's nobody there. The guy's running away, the defender. So, no, USC hasn't, until, they made some adjustments Saturday, hasn't really accounted for the quarterback, and they have to.
Okay, let's go to Martin, and he says, do you think Lane and Monty would consider moving Morgan Breslin to a rover-type position on the defensive line? Steve Spurrier at South Carolina uses Jadeveon Clowney like that. What do you think?
No, I think they need to get Morgan so that he uses all those, all that speed and that aggressiveness, and in an under control way enough so that he doesn't. Now teams are now trying to just shuttle him to the far outside and on a deep rush, and he's still getting there quickly. but he's getting, 18 yards deep, and the quarterback's, 8 yards deep, because they're trying to use his speed against him. And I would not think when you're talking about a rover, you really need a guy who can play in space, tackle in space, and go both directions. And there are some guys that are sort of edge rushers that are, really good coming one way and coming from one angle, but they're not the kind of person that you're going to have go left, go right, stop, break down, do all those kinds of things. And I don't see that as Morgan's strength, skill set. I think, using his, edge rushing ability and his aggressiveness and his toughness and his speed and getting that under control so that where he is able to get to is also where the ball carrier, where the quarterback especially is. And making sure, that they can't run inside or outside. Don't let them, take you one way or the other just because you can go there fast. So I think the thing with Morgan is keep him where he is and just really getting to the place where he can be in the play, where he can really be involved, and where he really, causes terrific problems for, some tackle, trying to block him or make him bring a second guy and, use up a second offensive, lineman or running back or whoever to have to take care of him.
All right, Dan, let's go back to the questions. This one is from Elmo. He wanted to know, why isn't USC throwing to the running backs more? We don't ever have McNeil and Red both in the backfield with Barkley in the shotgun, so one could be a safety option for Barkley. And Dan, just to be fair, I asked Lane Kiffin about this in his conference call last night. It did not seem we would watch them in practice try to run screens to the running backs, and they were just, for lack of a better word, ugly. But the last couple of games, they've actually worked really well. So maybe you want to talk about that a little bit.
Well, yeah, and I think one of the problems is if you personnel package it the way, for example, it had both of them in there, it would be what used to happen when USC would have Allen Bradford in the game against Stanford, and the entire Stanford defense was pointing at him and saying, swing pass, they're going to throw a swing pass to 21, go over, everybody over here, It was like if you saw Red and McNeil in the game at the same time, I'm thinking you're going to start suspecting screen pass, because one of the reasons USC doesn't do as much with the running backs as you would like to see it is they want to make sure they got somebody else blocking, because for a long, a good part of this year, they haven't been sure where the breakdown's going to come on the offensive line, and they've had two, young left tackles. So there has been and I think it's hurt, Barkley in terms of progressions, and, one of the reasons maybe he doesn't get around to Robert Woods because he's tending to try to throw the ball, and it's maybe hurt the interception situation too because he's trying to throw the ball to the first available target or the obvious available target to some extent. And that's not necessarily his fault because he knows how much time he's liable to have on different plays. So, but when you've got more confidence and when you can run the ball, and you've got more confidence in your offensive line that they're going to execute, then you can, run plays like two straight weeks, a successful screen pass. And I do think that the 22-yard touchdown screen pass to Curtis was the best single screen pass I may have ever seen since I've been at, been covering USC, and that's like, 10 plus years. That was as good as you can possibly do it. One of the things that helps there is Arizona State's really got an aggressive pass rush, and so, but USC used that against them. I mean, Oregon has one too, I just think you have to be ready to use those kinds of things. It also helped to have Curtis McNeil, 100% and ready to go, and knowing he was going to get to play and really getting into the flow of the game. I think there's a case where you get enough plays. He got 31 carries and, his first ever, pass receiving touchdown and all that. He was really into the flow of the game. And I think that really matters a lot. I think it was a combination of things like everything that made that happen. I know, they try, for example, even at times to get – Marquez and Robert Woods as pass receivers out of the backfield. But, they'll have a play that, you know, like they start the second half with, that's just not executed exactly, and it's not put together really well. I didn't like the idea of having Barkley have to fake away from where he was going to throw the ball, because then he turns and he's throwing blindly, basically, and here's this, you know, Arizona State defensive end right in his face and makes a, you know, and I will agree with Lane, the guy made a phenomenal play. But why make Barkley turn completely away from where the pressure is liable to be coming and have to throw right through the guy if the guy makes a great play? And they were trying to slip Robert out, and that was a good idea. I think that was a great idea to get the ball to Robert, slipping him out into space, you know, on a play action opposite the flow of the play. But the whole play together just didn't work, and put Barkley in a situation. I know he talked about two of the three interceptions as just being weird, and they were a little bit, but I think we don't want to always put Barkley in a situation where he has to make an adjustment at the very last minute. Sometimes he can do that. Sometimes if you've got your body turned completely one way and then you're coming back, you almost don't have enough time to make that last second adjustment, and on that play he didn't.
Let's go to Renee, Dan. Let's see. He said, I believe USC's offense would be more explosive if they went to the tight ends early in the game. I agree with Coach Hyde. He states that the offense should use a jumbo formation when they have it inside the 5-yard line. I thought the use of the wildcat in the red zone was just terrible. I think it only works in that situation if the player is able to pass the football. That's from Renee.
Well, I like the idea of the wildcat if they get into it quickly enough, and if they've got a guy who's kind of a power running. I mean, I thought, you know, I don't think it ever didn't work with Mark Tyler last year. And now he was only a barely acceptable guy throwing the ball, but he wasn't totally unacceptable. But he didn't really have to because of the way they got into it and got it quickly. I don't know that the jumbo isn't a good idea. I think we would probably like to see USC young tight ends block better at the point of attack. That hasn't been a strong suit. They're not Red Allison out there, and at least one of them, and occasionally both of them, have a tendency to jump and get false starts. And that's the other thing you're probably not crazy about when you get, you know, you get to the 5-yard line. You're probably not looking for somebody to jump and get a 5-yard penalty. But it's the kind of thing that I think if you do it enough and perfect it, and you really feel like that everybody is on the same page and you can really execute it, that's the way you could go that way. I'm not sure it's the kind of thing, though, you can say, this week we're going to do this. It's something completely different. We're going to fool them. You often fool yourself. You know, you really do have to, I think, have a kind of a consistency and a consistent approach, especially when you're down on, you know, in the red zone. And yes, he's been a little bit grab baggy in the red zone, trying to outsmart them, trying to come up with stuff they hope works, or just saying, throw it up for Marquise and let's hope he grabs it. That's probably not the best way.
Okay. And Renee mentioned Coach Harvey Hyde in that. There was something he had talked about, the jumbo package, but I wanted to ask you about this. Lane Kiffin mentioned Coach Harvey Hyde during the conference call yesterday. They actually ran the toss a little bit more, and that was something that Coach Harvey Hyde was critical on the Peristyle podcast, and I think also on his the show that they do on Sunday, the Trojan Brunch. I think he talked about that when you ran that reverse on 4th-and-2 to Marquise Lee, you really have to set that up with the toss. I thought it was funny that Lane Kiffin actually mentioned that, but mentioned coach by name. What did you think about that?
Well, I think a couple of things. It does tell you Lane pays attention. Lane's listening. Lane's thinking. Lane's trying to figure things out. Second thing is probably that thought had occurred to him, and then here he's driving into work on Sunday morning, and Harvey's talking about it on the brunch, and I think it probably, you know, you're looking at Arizona State and you say, man, they really come. They come down hard. what would be a good thing to do? Well, you know, maybe release those, release those tackles. And let's face it, now, I mean, you know, after you have Andre Walker play the best game of his career, and he's alternating, he gets one out of every three series, and Max Turk just keeps playing really well. And he's got a lot of athleticism in him. Why not do, hey, you know, if it were me, I might say, I was watching the Oregon game against USC, and they pull their tackles. Sometimes they pull their tackles and guards. Sometimes they pull, you know, one tackle and two guards. They're pulling everybody, and they're getting outside, and they're running up, you know, with these big guys running over, you know, running over cornerbacks. Maybe that would be a good thing for us to do. So I think it all worked. You know, the timing was really well. They have probably enough confidence now in the USC young guys, and it matches what they do well. It really matches, you know, their skill set. That Andre Walker, I will say this. He's never looked more athletic. I mean, I know people worry he's only 300 pounds, but man, he was running around after practice the other day, and that some of the tackles were kind of racing, and he's an athlete. He doesn't always look like it sometimes with his footwork, on like, you know, little, say if he's got some really, you know, good out, you know, pass, edge pass rusher, but boy, can he, if you get him pulling out, he pulled out on that one, you know, the one touchdown. He's a force. And so I just think it suits USC's personnel to do more of that. So it was kind of nice there that Lane recognized that Harvey had said it, and they did it. And, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, UCLA's got some people who can really come down on the edge. The kind of thing that, if you remember the 13-9 game, USC didn't have any of that in their repertoire that day. And, they thought they had enough offense in that they could handle that, you know, UCLA defensive ends coming crashing down, and they didn't. So I think that was one of the best things we saw Saturday, was the ability to, you know, get those, especially tackles out in space. But I think we saw a lot of movement on the screen pass touchdown. Abe Markowitz got out, and, you know, he's been a center, so you don't always get to see him, you know, running and all that. I thought he just did a terrific job getting out in front of Curtis and clearing away and throwing a block and stuff. I don't know that I've ever seen him get to do that before. So I thought that there were a lot of good things that happened, you know, from that standpoint.
Okay, a couple more, Dan, before we let you go. This is Earl in West L.A., what do you think of Marquise Lee's Heisman chances after his dropping performance against Arizona State? If Lee is not a game changer, I don't know who is. His 80-yard touchdown run and 38-yard run to set up a touchdown on a busted reverse play were draw-dropping. ASU preferred to give the Trojans the ball near midfield with squib kicks rather than having Lee return those kickoffs. What do you think about Lee's Heisman chances?
Well, I think if you look at our Heisman pundit guy, Chris Houston, who I guess dropped Marquise out of the running, I guess was it 2 weeks ago, and this week he's got him at number two. Chris isn't the only one that's made adjustment on Marquise. I think Kansas State quarterback Colin Klein, if he doesn't get hurt and if he keeps playing the way he has been, and if they, you know, win their last couple of games, he's going to be awfully hard to overcome. I think Marquise is in absolutely great position. I mean, I think the consensus is who is playing better than he is, who is having more of an impact. I mean, one of the things I actually voted once in the Heisman, then decided football is such a team sport. It just goes against kind of the concept of football, with when you have to have so many guys do so many things right, to just pick out one guy. And I know all the, you know, the wonderful stuff about it and how much, how good it's been for USC and Notre Dame and Ohio State and Alabama recently and all that, and it reflects the program. But when you've got a guy like Marquise Lee who can contribute in so many different ways, I think that fits the award. I mean, that's almost the definition of the award. What a Marquise Lee is doing this year and stepping up, you know, in a team that's got a lot of pressure and has had, you know, some real setbacks, and here's a kid that just keeps getting, you know, better and better, and just keeps competing more and more. So, and he's, his skill level is, and his competitive level are just unsurpassed. I mean, he's just, you know, when you look at that 80-yard touchdown the other day, you realize they truly did have him bracketed with double coverage, and he just, he ran through double coverage. I mean, just boom, boom, and next thing you know, both guys are like trailing him, and he's not even 100%. It's just kind of an amazing thing. So, yeah, I think he's put himself right in the mix, and he's got the kind of finish. There will be a lot of attention for the UCLA game this week. There will be, if Notre Dame doesn't stub their toe against Wake Forest this weekend, people will, you won't believe what's going to happen next week. There will be Notre Dame fans parachuting over the stadium trying to get into the game. I mean, they will be coming from places. I mean, this will be like the biggest game in Notre Dame since the last time they played USC in, what, 1988. This might be the biggest game Notre Dame's played in. And, you know, one of their biggest games in, you know, 40 years. One of their two or three biggest games. So, it's what, for example, Carson Palmer essentially won his Heisman with his season-ending performance against Notre Dame in the Coliseum. So those kinds of moments can happen. So the only negative for Colin Klein is they finish up early, don't have a championship game. So Marquise, for example, plays a higher-profile schedule to finish, and USC will be playing a couple of weeks possibly after Kansas State is finished. So that could be a factor.
It certainly could. We'll be watching to see what happens. High-profile games late in the season are a great way to boost your Heisman campaign, so we'll see what happens there. One last one for you, Dan. Dimitri from Kiev in the Ukraine. He's talking about like kind of the SEC here, and maybe get your thoughts. He says, seems like the Aggies from Texas A&M will finish their SEC schedule 6-2. Two losses are to Florida and LSU by one score. Doesn't that show that there is more parity between conferences than analysts like to admit? I can see SC with three losses doing no worse in the SEC.
Well, here's the question I've got is, if you look at what Texas A&M has done, they had a 59-57 win over Louisiana Tech, I'm guessing. I don't think that was the score. So does that make Louisiana Tech better than Alabama? I think the SEC, we had a poster this week on the Peristyle. They had the greatest analysis. He looked at, the SEC has seven ranked teams. The Pac-12 has six. Out of the seven ranked SEC teams, they've played a total of two outside of the conference ranked opponents. Two. They played Michigan and Louisiana Tech. And that's it. So you could have teams in the SEC like, oh, Mississippi State just gets blown out and blown out and blown out, and they're still ranked, you know. And people say, well, our team in the SEC beat four ranked teams. Well, four, they're all in the SEC. Who knows? They don't leave home. They don't cross, you know, they don't leave the time zone. They don't, you know, they don't travel. And they sure don't play ranked teams outside the conference. So it is hard to get a fix on them. I know the computer guys, when they admit it truthfully, will say they did not think that this is how the BCS was going to go, and they thought they'd have enough games between teams from all the different conferences that they would get a pretty good fix on them. And this is a year you have no idea how good those teams are. You know, so I think there's way more parity, and maybe not even – this might be a year where the SEC doesn't have all that much parity. I mean, obviously, no one told Texas A&M when they joined the SEC, they didn't tell them, you're not supposed to have freshman quarterbacks who can throw the football. That's just – we don't do that here. And so nobody told Texas A&M, so they show up at Alabama the other night. The Alabama that can beat an NFL team, we're being told. And they throw the ball down the field. Why, it's just not fair. What, those big, strong Alabama, you know, frontline defenders, they couldn't play pass defense. No, I guess they couldn't. So, I think it was great that we got a chance to see, because that was almost an out-of-conference game for Alabama to play, a Texas A&M first year. They had to play them, they had to go to Tuscaloosa, and Alabama – you know, I mean, for all the people that were telling you how great Alabama was, have we seen them play against a team that could throw the ball? No. How do we know what they would do? We don't. And so all these people that were so sure how good Alabama was, they had no clue. How could you have a clue? The way, the you know, oh, they beat LSU. Oh, yeah. Yeah, LSU can really throw the ball. That's a that's a really high-powered, you know, modern offense. I mean, to be honest, after going through, you know, there was a lot of hype about the new coaches and that in the Pac-12. Pac-12's tough. What, you know, and then what Chip Kelly's doing at Oregon. Holy criminy. I mean, they're doing things that either they're going to have to change the rules or you're going to really have to change the way you play. That's not happening, for example, in the SEC. Hey, this might be a good year. The SEC may be smart enough to say, you know what, we've been watching Oregon this year. We'll just pass on matching up in that game. We'll let them. We'll kind of let them have it this year. You know, that doesn't mean, you know, USC can't match up if they play them at the end of the year. Let's face it, USC blew at least two, you know, touchdown opportunities in that game. And if they'd had two, if they'd have made them punt, you know, three times instead of one, how different is that game? Maybe, you know, USC's the team that scored 62. I mean, they can't play any worse. You know, let's say they hold them to 48. Who knows? I mean, so to be honest, as down as people can be on USC, they may have the best chance in the country of beating, you know, Oregon or anybody. I know people say, well, you give somebody 4 weeks to get ready for Oregon and maybe you can get ready. I'm not sure this year you've kind of got as much of an opportunity to do that. Now, obviously, Oregon is, you know, they worked Marcus Mariota and Kenyon Barner really hard. And that doesn't mean, you know, they'll be completely healthy for any game or completely healthy through any game. So, you know, that's always the downside of you know, that kind of an offense. You've got two guys who are really, you know, carrying everything. And if you don't have them, you know, you just, you know, if you can take out, you know, you don't give up, you know, big returns to DeAnthony Thomas. And, you know, you kind of don't break down on pass coverage, you know, you might have a shot. But you would love almost to see that matchup this year. But I'm thinking the SEC, I just don't think they're that good this year. I don't think that's the matchup you're going to see.
All right. Well, Dan, we appreciate you coming on the show and batting leadoff for us with Coach on special assignment. But thanks a lot. We'll see you out at practice tomorrow. Should be an interesting week, rivalry week, getting ready for USC-UCLA.
Hey, we better not start this rumor, but I guess there's always a chance Lane's hiring Harvey as a consultant, maybe. You know, just going over out now. I guess that's probably not allowed, but I guess just unofficial consulting work where he I do think that's what a lot of us do, and I think it's what a lot of the P people do. They all like to be consultants to the USC football program, and they probably are in some ways.
Great. All right. Well, thanks, Dan. Appreciate you coming on the show. Everyone, we have the very special treat I talked about earlier. Zach Jerome is coming up right after this 30-second break. He is the owner, blogger, bear fighter, arrogant nation leader of Los Angeles blog. It's going to be a lot of fun. Stay tuned for that in 30 seconds.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concerts, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
We are back here on the Peristyle Podcast, and as promised, very special guest. We have Zach Jerome. He is the owner and blogger that everyone knows as Mr. Los Angeles, the bear fighter. You can see him at Los Angeles blog at word.wordpress.com. Zach, what's going on, sir? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
I'm great. I was just excited to get you on the show. Everyone, if people don't know, I guess maybe you can give people a little bit of background of how you kind of got started and where you are on Twitter and stuff like that. But everyone, you know, he's a member of the Peristyle. People love when he posts all his blogs pregame and postgame, the Arrogant Nation. There's a lot going on with you, Zach. It's good to have you on.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. My pleasure. Yeah, I think for anyone who doesn't know, I got the blog was definitely never started or intended to be a USC football blog, but I think it was hard for me not to write about it, just given what everything was. And mainly the what really had happened was when the ruling came down, like on sanctions, one of the weirdest things, I work in digital and social media strategy, like on the advertising side. And so one of the things they teach you a lot about is to like social listen. So you should be always aware sort of what everyone's talking about. I'm sure last week, everyone was aware of everyone that they knew's political opinion. If you're on Facebook,
exactly, yeah.
or on Twitter, right? So I was noticing kind of the same thing where, you know, a lot of students, I'd never seen anything like this, were just like down on the football team. You know, oh, the games don't count. You know, there's just a lot of this attitude that I just really was unfamiliar with. Being like, my first game was Pete Carroll's first game as an undergrad. And, you know, I mean, we were leaving the games by halftime. We were up by so much. And, you know, it was sort of that sort of swagger. So I wrote a post. I don't know how much I'm allowed to swear on the
yeah, you can.
Podcast.
I don't think there's any FCC regulations.
I'm good. Oh, okay. Well, shit. No, so I wrote a post called The Most Arrogant Shit Ever, which I have, like, if anyone wants to read, it's still, like, on the header of my blog. It's up at the top. So if anyone wants to read that, I keep that posted. But it was where I basically said, like, it doesn't really matter, you know, until there's a real playoff system, it doesn't really matter, you know, if you win the BCS national championship or what you do, as long as they're letting us play, we can beat the other team. And just because, you know, it kind of went to that concept of vacated wins. Like, you know, I don't think anybody, I was at the game where we beat Oklahoma at the national championship. I'm pretty sure none of my Sooner friends feel like they magically won that game that day.
Exactly.
Like, I'm sure they'd love to get their travel funds back. So basically what that turned into was I just got thousands and thousands and thousands of hits on that post. And it was weird because I was walking around my office, which is like an office with like 800 people, and people were like sharing the blog around the office that didn't know I worked there. And then I had people actually send my own blog back to me. And at that point, they're like, check this out. This guy sounds like you, you know? I was like, yeah, that's great. Cause it is me. And so it was exciting. And so I kind of thought, you know, maybe I'll start doing like previews of the games. And so I tried to like focus on what was fun about the games and like, what were the traditions that, you know, we had at USC that were ultimately so much bigger than whether or not you won or lost, because everyone in the Peristyle knows, you know, I've said it a million times, like, we're going to win more than we're going to lose. Doesn't matter what decade we're talking about. Even if, you know, we're talking about the Haggett years, it's fine. We're still going to win more than we're going to lose. So most of the time, this is not like you're a Kansas City Royal fan and you don't know when it's going to happen again. You know, we're going to win again. So if you lose, you got to walk out. You got to just enjoy that you watched some football, that you were drunk on Truesdale, and then just get ready for next week. And that's been, you know, one of the weirdest things is I've seen the biggest traffic usually is obviously after a signature win, but the next biggest traffic is actually after a signature loss. I think probably two of my top four posts I've ever done, just in terms of doing an Arrogant Game preview or recap, were after the Stanford loss this year, and then after the I think it was after the Stanford loss the year before. So I mean, it's kind of a weird thing how that works, but people actually turn to the blog a lot to know how to feel, because I think we've gotten to a place where we feel like we need to be completely invincible and never lose. And it's just not true, because in the end of the day, one of the things that's so true about our fan base is that there's no chance they'd rather, you know, pull for a different team. It's not like, oh, you know what? I should have gone to Oregon. You know, I mean, no one feels that way. So I kind of have always pushed people to focus on the fact that, you know, we've got the Bruins this week. That's a big deal. Believe me, they're only thinking about, oh my God, maybe we might beat these guys once. You know, that's all they're thinking about. There's nothing wrong with us thinking that way. And kind of goes to the old adage of 1 week at a time. But I think it's kind of a celebration of 1 week at a time is sort of my philosophy.
So we're joined by Zach Jerome. You can follow him on Twitter at Lost, L-O-S-T underscore Angeles. And it's he's a great follow. Of course, you can see him. He's posted under that name on the Peristyle as well. You can check him out there and his blog, LostAngelesBlog.wordpress.com. So the theme about your blog is the arrogance, the arrogant nation, and you're the bear fighter, a two-time cancer survivor. Where did the arrogant part come from? And Lane Kiffin seems to be the perfect coach to go along with the arrogance theme.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a weird anecdote, but I always think that it's kind of the best thing to take. It's something that a couple agencies have worked at. It's kind of a good place to start for a campaign in a lot of ways, which is take the thing that everyone thinks is the worst thing about you and then just celebrate it. because I think everywhere deep down, right? Like, I think when we complain again with the language that UCLA is just a huge bunch of pussies, right? Like, I'm just saying, when we look at their football team, and I'm not saying that they won't play well this week. I'm just saying historically that attitude that let's do an aid clap, an old dude waving a towel, right? Like, I think our hatred of that, right, comes from us wanting them to act a little tougher, right? Like, cause you sit there, you watch a Michigan Ohio State game and you're like, oh my God, like you get so fired up. You feel like it's like the end of Lord of the Rings, you know, these guys both just hate each other. They come out in opposing colors and they do all that. And then this week, you know, Bruin Nation has a post up we're really mad that they're stabbing the field at halftime. We stab every field at halftime. Be a football fan. You know what I mean? Like Florida State does the same thing. It's just like, they're just such whiners. And so I think deeply what we hate about that is that we want them to be tougher. So I think that in a weird way, and that's even when they win, they don't know how to win. Like you get the, oh, well, guess what? It's that sort of attitude, which growing up at a high school that was blue and gold and in Southern California, ouch, and most of the people in my town went to UCLA, I was always around it. So for the arrogance, for me, it was that's what everyone hated about us. You know, they put the dollar sign in our name and University of Spoiled Children. I'm like, all right. It's just sort of my thesis. It's like, great, you know, you're right. I do love it here. And, you know, you guys are nerds. And it's like, why not? You know, and there's a little bit of, upsmanship or one-upsmanship when it comes down to it. I think in the workforce, certainly in Los Angeles, I've experienced that we all get along really well. But Arrogant Nation to me was, I remember my first, I was visiting campus with my dad before I was an undergrad, I was looking at the school or basically hoping they let me in. I heard these two kids just leaving the game. And they didn't know how much we were winning by, you know, they didn't care. They were just talking about who was hanging out later that night. And I just thought it was the funniest thing in the world that they had just taken the win for granted completely, but they loved that they won. They were decked out in USC gear. And there was always just this mentality of it didn't matter at all who you were, as long as you were with us. And it was sort of that, I know the band has the FEBU, the, you know, fuck everyone but us thing, right, going on, and yeah. FTFO, which obviously I've put on a shirt in their honor, the fight the fuck on. It's just sort of our attitude. And I think that that's kind of thing to play up. And to your point about Kiffin, you know, I didn't plan that, but you figured it had to be a very arrogant dude who was going to take this job at the time that he did, you know? And because, you know, the Jeff Fishers and Jack Del Rios at the time, I feel like they probably were taking a step back because of, you know, the scholarship limitations and, you know, not knowing how deep the wormhole would go, or the rabbit hole. And so I think Kiffin came in and he's like, yeah, whatever. Got a hot wife. I don't give a shit. Let's do this. Right. Let's go out. You know, let's have the number one recruiting class. Yeah, I got to take 10 less guys. It's fine. They'll be better than everyone else's 25. And I like that. And I know people are down on him right now because of the bubble screens and because his dad is running a Tampa 2 in a time where I think people want to see something upgraded. But I want everyone to remember, I don't know how many people could have brought our team to such high expectations with our hands so just unjustly cuffed behind our back. So I'm kind of suspending my doubt still. And we win this week and, you know, go out and beat Notre Dame. And you know, maybe a three-loss season, but I think, you know, you're playing in the Pac-12 championship. You got a lot on the line. You know, I'm not ready to phone it in. I think that was the point of the blog in the first place, which is to say you can always improve your season. You know, it doesn't matter what you were. And one of the most fun seasons I ever had was 6-6 my freshman year with Pete Carroll. I mean, it was one of the most fun we ever had. And, you know, we were rewarded for our patience, you know. So I think it's kind of one of those things, like I said, we're going to win again. I think we're going to start next Saturday and continue off of last week.
Well, great stuff on Kiffin there. And I know you got to go back to work, your regular job. But before we leave you, just I guess the most arrogant time of the year would have to be playing the rivalry games. You mentioned UCLA and Notre Dame. Anything special coming up? And any thoughts on the two rivalry games coming up?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, UCLA is actually up for it this year. They're a much more competent team. It is a monster, and there's a lot at stake. We haven't really seen a game with them that had so much on the line since I think that loss that we took that cost us a shot at the fake national championship back with Booty playing quarterback at the Rose Bowl.
Yeah,
I was at that game.
13-9.
I drank a lot that day, but that was cool. It was fine. You know what? We won again. But yeah, it was this week is there's just a lot, and their basketball fans are actually watching football right now. And I always say, you know, I think this is a chance for Barkley to complete what I think is the coolest legacy in the world, which is that, I mean, he could go undefeated against teams with Bears as mascots. He's 7-0 right now. And, I mean,
coming a lot from the bear fighter.
Yeah. Bears. what's up?
Coming a lot from the bear fighter. That means a lot, I think, to him.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I mean, you know, Barkley's a good dude, and I've gotten to know him a little bit, like with the pep rallies and stuff that I've done at school. And he's a good dude, and I know that he won't say it, but I think that that's one of the ones that I think that's his private Heisman Trophy. You know, I mean, I don't think there's anything better probably as a USC quarterback to run the table against UCLA, and if you want to run the table against Cal too, why not? You know, that said, I think this is just a massive week for us because it's really been a long time. And the difference between this game and that game that cost us a shot at the title was, I mean, UCLA was just playing spoiler and, you know, it was just kind of they were being an annoyance and they kind of rained on our parade. This one, I mean, they have a lot that they want to do, and I think they'd love to go get a shot to go back at the Pac-12 championship and, you know, avenge whatever happened last year where they kind of backed in with us not being able to go and just got thoroughly embarrassed by Oregon. So I think they have a lot at stake too. And then we get like a massive gift the following week too, which is that Notre Dame, you know, if they don't slip up, what a chance. I mean, you know, beyond what it'll do for us in terms of hopefully sneaking back into a, you know, BCS spot, to get to play them when they're so high up on their horse. I mean, I love the idea that we would have a chance to knock two of the top three teams in the country out.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing that I tweeted the other day was that I think it's just crazy to think that for the first time I can think of, the SEC is completely rooting for us right now,
exactly.
Which is the weirdest concept in the world because we've always sort of been the one team that was going to maybe keep out the second team of theirs. Or the one team I think that privately they're a little afraid of because they like to talk down those Arkansas and Auburn teams, and it's easy for them to forget, you know, Leinart's first game, that 24-0 where they were preseason number one. It's easy for them to forget, you know, that one of those Arkansas teams, I think it was the second year with McFadden. I mean, they won, I think, what was it, the SEC West that year? I think they did. It's not like we were playing scrubs and, you know, LSU was ducking us. So I think it's just kind of ironic that, you know, if they want to get back into the national championship picture, they're hoping we get to the, you know, Pac-12 championship, bump Oregon, and, you know, and then we take Notre Dame out and free up a spot so that we can watch someone run the ball 200 times, which I know we all really enjoyed last year. That was super awesome. So, you know, it's kind of fun, but I like that. It's there are a lot of fun SEC bloggers who aren't as myopic as their readers, and we have a lot of fun talking football. So it'll be fun that they'll be with us. So, you know, all eyes on UCLA. Let's get this job done. Stab the bear in the heart. And I will be posting on Thursday. I'm going to have a very apologetic post today, which was, you know, I'm sorry, I've been moving into an apartment, and I was, like, watching. I was telling you before we got on the phone that I, in the middle of moving, I basically could only watch, you know, 5 minutes a time of the game, and I think the last time I did that was when I got married. We were in the middle of the Oregon game, like, 3 or 2 years ago, and I was running down and watching 5 minutes of the, I think the third quarter, and someone ran and grabbed me and said it was like the garter belt throw or whatever. I was like, oh, shit, I better run back up there. So it was terrible. I spilled scotch everywhere. So, but that said, it's a big week. We're excited. Going to beat the Bruins. You can definitely catch today's post. But Thursday, I'll have the arrogant game preview. And I'm promising it's going to be my most arrogant in a while. I promise. Yes. I'm going to be a huge, huge asshole, and they're going to feel me all over the country.
All right. Well, thanks very much. Zach Jerome, everybody, for coming on the show. Thank you very much. You can follow him on Twitter, lost_Angeles, and you can go to his blog, lostangelesblog.wordpress.com. We definitely had more swearing on this episode than any of our 240-whatever prior episodes all at once, so thanks very much for that, Zach. We're setting records.
That's right. We're setting fucking records. Oh, one more.
Thanks again, man. Really appreciate it.
Talk to you later, man.
Okay, take care. Thanks. And everyone else, thank you very much for tuning into the Peristyle Podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.